We are back right now, Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams live from the Right Side Studios. We are right here, like we always tend to say, solid conservative and just plain right. Hey, Kelsey, do me a favor, man. Get clip one ready, please. Just write it on the board whenever you got it and you're good to go. So here's the deal. Green raw deal. That's where we are right now. Number one of the triple dipper, the green raw deal. And I'm looking at the fact that, you know, like I said in my monologue earlier, it's like they don't care. It's not like they don't care. They don't care. The fact that you and I are experiencing pain at the pump, that you and I are experiencing higher energy costs, that we're seeing our rates increase for all of our utilities, the fact that you and I are seeing prices escalate at the grocery store for just basic foodstuffs because the cost of shipping has gone through the roof in large part because the energy sector has climbed. All of that, they don't care. And so, it's a big deal. And yet, you know, it's do as I do, not as I say a lot of times. Most recently, just it's galling when you think about it. So you know who the deal is, the guy is. I mean, I'm sorry, you know who the guy is, the czar, the green energy czar right now, John Kerry. John Kerry, who is also the biggest jet setter in government. John Kerry, the climate czar, who apparently has his private jet flying him everywhere and just believes with impunity that we should experience, you know, hardship in terms of our own travel, but not for him. I would bet you too. I don't know this for a fact, but I'm gonna go ahead and just call it out. You can go ahead and say 2:37 p.m. on July 21st, 2022. Phil Williams predicted that John Kerry, when he flies in his personal jet on a government-sanctioned business trip, that he's getting reimbursed for all the fuel costs at taxpayer expense. What do you bet? Well, let's talk about his jet for a minute. What does this green raw deal mean to him? I mean, what is he foisting upon us? I tell you what, Kelsey, clip one. Go ahead and play clip one if you would, please.
Today in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, President Biden set to address climate change, which he sees as a major threat to America. It comes while his very own climate czar, John Kerry, faces backlash as his family's private jet is put to very good use. Records show Kerry's Gulfstream made 48 trips since Biden took office, emitting more than 300 metric tons of carbon, which, of course, he would frown on, except it's his jet. Fox News contributor Douglas Murray.
All right, you can stop it there, Kelsey. Just sort of laying it out there, you know, on the lower shelf here. Just putting it out there where all the baby goats can eat it is that they don't care. This is a thing that they think is cool, and it's virtue signaling. It's an opportunity for them to look like they're doing something. And yet, at the same time, they don't follow their own advice. How many times, and I get it, he's president of the United States, and so the nuclear football, the communications gear, the security, all aspects of his life, if any one of us were president of the United States, we would have to and want to have the same assets available. We'd need it. It's part of the job. It's part of the gig. And yet, stop and think about it. How many times has President Biden gassed up Air Force One for the short hop to Delaware for another weekend off? 3 and 4 day weekends have become the norm at the Biden White House for him. Every single one of them requires an exponential amount of logistics, all of which has its carbon footprint. But you know what? It's important. He's an important person. He's got to do that. You know, you can't go to Camp David, sir. You can't go just maybe spend the weekend kind of with your feet up in the West Wing's living quarters. You can't do that. I mean, so it's literally gotten to the point that he is vacationing every week. But every time he does, they fuel up Air Force One. And it's just part of it. And we just have to live with it. In the meantime, the green raw deal is still being perpetrated upon us. Story here from Fox, dated July 15th. You will be glad to know that once again, Republicans in D.C. have been saved by one Democrat, Joe Manchin. So July 15th, which is what, Friday? Yeah, this last Friday. Senator Joe Manchin says he won't support climate and tax provisions in a sweeping Democratic bill. So there was a major spending bill that was being pushed by the Biden administration, pushed by Schumer and Pelosi, trying to get all kinds of, they call it a reconciliation bill, which means they were going to bypass the filibuster if they could get the simple majority to vote on bypassing the filibuster. They were going to go straight to another major spending opportunity, which was going to include huge green energy provisions. But Manchin, it says, and his staff told Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer unequivocally on Thursday of last week that he is only willing to support a reconciliation bill in August that includes provisions to lower prescription drug prices and a two-year extension of the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare. I mean, I don't like those either, but I still look at it and go, well, that's at least he scaled them down. And Manchin was explicit that he won't support a bill before the midterms with any provisions on energy and climate or closing tax loopholes. So despite his support for those things and other months of negotiations, here's his quote. You ready? Manchin spokesperson came out and said, political headlines are of no value to the millions of Americans struggling to afford groceries and gas as inflation soars to 9.1%. Senator Manchin believes it's time for leaders to put aside political agendas, reevaluate, and adjust to the economic realities the country faces, and to avoid taking steps that add fuel to the inflation fire. Well, all right, so that happened last Friday. And yet, you know, not to be quelled forever, the Biden administration had to figure out what to do next. What do you do? I mean, what do you do? I mean, how do you work this? Where do you go next when you need the grain raw deal because for some reason it's the most important thing in the world? Well, let me just tell you, by the way, it's not the most important thing in the world. I am sitting here right now. I had to do some searching to find it. I can't rattle the paper on this one because I got it online. But on my screen right now, I've got a poll done by the New York Times that came out just, let's see when this came out, just the last few days. Yep, sure did. The last few days. And so the New York Times poll polled its readers in a bipartisan fashion, by the way, although I'm not sure how many of their readers are Republicans. It says just 1% of voters in a recent New York Times Siena College poll named climate change as the most important issue facing the country. Far behind worries about inflation and the economy. Even among voters under 30, it says, the group thought to be the most energized by the issue, that figure was no more than 3%. So here's the deal. This is being touted as the existential crisis of our lifetime right now. We are being told on a daily basis by the Biden administration that climate change is the most important and galvanizing topic that they can deal with. All other matters are set aside in order to pursue the green raw deal. And yet the polling shows only 1% of American voters would agree with that sentiment. 1%. So they are pursuing something at the expense of the 99 to go after the one. And that is, you know, that is not what we need right now in terms of leadership in D.C. Just trucking along, man. So what happened? So yesterday, another story off Fox. Biden announces executive actions on climate crisis, focuses on extreme heat and boosting offshore wind. So what did he do? Well, not to be held up by one of the co-equal branches of government, President Biden decided to go make a press conference at the feet of a former coal plant in, where were they? Massachusetts, I believe. Yep, Massachusetts. Yeah. And it says he did this because he's taking executive action because Joe Manchin was standing in the way of his climate agenda in Congress. Thank you, Joe Manchin. Says he gave the speech and he says, this is an emergency. And I will look at it that way, Biden said. I said last week, I'll say it again loud and clear. As president, I'll use my executive powers to combat climate change, the climate crisis, in the absence of congressional action. Well, what's he asking for right now? Here we go. You ready? Here's the shopping list of things he thinks he can do with his pen and his phone. He says included in the executive actions is an effort to, you ready for this? Tell me what this means. Quote, protect communities from extreme heat and dangerous climate impacts, which includes $2.3 billion in funding for the Federal Emergency Management Agency's Building Resilient Infrastructure and Communities program in 2022, which is intended to help communities, quote, increase resilience to heat waves, drought, wildfires, flood, hurricanes, and other hazards. I don't know what that means. Do you? I don't. He also says, he goes on to say, the executive actions by Biden also include an effort to lower cooling costs for communities who are suffering from extreme heat. Okay. How do you do that? You gonna pass out air conditioners? Are you gonna increase the power supply to the area? Because you're not gonna do it by downsizing the coal plants. You're not gonna do it by not agreeing to authorize the construction of nuclear. Additionally, the Biden administration will consider potential wind power projects in the Gulf of Mexico. Yay. Which are being proposed off the coast of Galveston, Texas, and off the coast of Lake Charles, Louisiana. The White House estimates these projects add the power to potential power of over 3 million homes with clean energy. Okay. Biden is also directing the Secretary of Interior to advance clean energy development off the coasts of Florida, Georgia, South Carolina, and North Carolina to ensure these southeast states will be able to benefit from good-paying jobs in the burgeoning offshore wind industry. Okay. So, all right. There was talk, and he hasn't done it yet, there was talk that the president was going to go ahead and not only name this an emergency in words, but also declare it an emergency under the executive authorities authorized for him in actual emergencies. That would give him the authority then to redirect funds that have currently been appropriated by Congress for one thing into another. That would give him the authority to direct industry to do certain things that they wouldn't have done otherwise. That would give him the authority to, you know, to bypass state laws in order to get things done. He didn't do that yet, although some believe that may still be coming. All right, more on the Green Raw Deal. Kelsey, go ahead and take us to a break, man. We'll take this break right now. We'll come back. I will continue to regale you with the level of research and knowledge that Right Side Radio puts into presenting its Triple Dipper. And this one is on the Green Raw Deal. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and by golly, just playing right. We'll be right back. Back, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right, covering all of North Alabama. That's right, Right Side Radio, man, I love it. All right, hey, listen, I got a caller on line two, held on during the break. Hey, it's Brian from Huntsville. Hey, Brian, how you doing today, man?
Doing well. I hope you all are as well.
Absolutely. And, what's on your mind?
Serious question there about the wind farms.
Yeah.
Are they going to put them around where oil derricks have been frozen from drilling, and then is that a prevention measure for ever bringing them back up again?
You know, it's a great question. So part of the problem is, I mean, obviously they're scared of oil spills, but they also stop you from disturbing the subsurface environments by getting those rigs out there into the deep waters. And these things, these wind farms, they have to be planted pretty hard to be able to be stable and sturdy long-term. I don't know, man. I don't know the answer to that.
So does an oil rig. I wonder if they're just going to take them and put windmills on top of them instead.
You know, who knows? But I look at some of the ones they've built offshore, you know, like up around Nantucket and that kind of area. I don't know. The whole thing is, to me, is a little bit ludicrous because the technology, while it does generate power, it is not sustainable as a replacement to the coal and nuclear grids that we have right now. Not at all.
Well, light side really fast, which would be, did Joe Biden give the Saudi crown prince, COVID, and he fist bumped?
Well, I don't know. I mean, it was a fist bump. So, thanks, Brian. Appreciate you. So, yeah, Brian brings up a great question. So I guess it's okay to destroy the subsurface reefs and habitats to plant a windmill, but not to plant an oil rig. I don't know. You know, the hypocrisy runs so deep that you just wonder, do they think it through? Do they think we're not going to ask these questions? I mean, does it really? Well, I'll tell you what, speaking of questions, and Copper, I'm sorry, Kelsey, I see you've got it highlighted. I assume that means that clip two is ready. If it's not, you just like scream in the mic, but I'm assuming it's ready. Here's the deal. So Pete Buttigieg was testifying before Congress just recently, and Representative Thomas Massie is a certified genius. And I don't say that because I admire the fact that he is willing to take stands. I say that because he's an MIT graduate, and he knows his stuff. So townhall.com has got an article that came out yesterday, but it had an accompanying audio. So townhall.com reports GOP lawmaker schools Buttigieg on why Biden's push for electric vehicles is impractical and would hurt Americans. Okay, so here's the deal. In case you didn't know, President Biden has signed an executive order that says that we will be at 50% of all vehicles in the U.S. would be electric by 2030. Now, oh, by the way, that's only 7.5 years from now. So in 7.5 years, half the vehicles on the road are going to be electric. Did you know that? That's the aspiration. Boomer's giving me the look, man. Boomer, are you going to now, you and I are both truck guys.
Trucks.
Yeah. Do you foresee in 7 years 50% of all vehicles going electric?
I don't see that. I guess that's what your paper says.
But no, that's what Biden's paper says.
That's what Biden's paper says.
My paper.
Sorry, I just laughed.
My paper just says that Biden's paper says that.
That's what I meant. Biden's paper that you're reading.
Do you think they actually have a plan? And this is 20 questions time here. But do you think they actually have a plan to make that happen?
No, I don't think there's actually a plan out there. I think they're just saying that.
You would be correct.
Yeah, thanks.
You would be correct. All right. Thank you for your input. You have confirmed my worst fears. So here's the deal. Representative Thomas Massie has Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg before committee just last week. Massie started off by saying he himself drives an electric vehicle. Okay. And he has for 10 years. Massie even says he has solar panels on his own house. Okay. But the administration's push for a rapid transformation of our energy sector is unrealistic, says Massie, given the U.S.'s current infrastructure, meaning that, oh, by the way, when you switch everything to electric, including half the vehicles, well, where do you think that power comes from? Somewhere, like, I don't know, maybe a power station. Are the power stations able to handle the increased load to the grid? Well, the former South Bend mayor, Pete Buttigieg, acknowledged the current grid would not be able to handle it, but said that work is being done to map out some of the needs, is what he said. So without further ado, the clip I've got right now is part of that conversation between Representative Thomas Massie and Secretary Pete Buttigieg. Go ahead and play it, Kelsey.
The problem is we don't have the capacity to produce that energy. You aptly used the word need. You could say want as well. There's needs and wants to make this fantasy work by 2030. But the reality is the capability is not going to be there. The average household uses 17% of their electricity for air conditioning. And that would mean the average household uses 1,870 kilowatt hours per year for air conditioning. If that average household plugged in electric cars, do you know how much more electricity they would use in comparison to the air conditioning that air conditions their whole house?
No, but again, I would emphasize it. Well,
let me help you with that first before we go on, because the numbers are important. It would take four times as much electricity to charge the average household's cars as the average household uses on air conditioning. Do you think that could be? So if we reach the goal by 2030 that Biden has of 50% adoption instead of 100% adoption, that means the average household would use twice as much electricity charging one of their cars.
Kelsey. Wow. Wow. All right, folks, I got more on this. I'm not done with this green raw deal. I'm going to touch back on it when we get back. And then coming up at the bottom of the next hour, the Grand Council with Dale Jackson and Jeff Poore. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We'll be right back.
Live to Right Side Radio with Phil Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right.
That's right, Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio, Phil Williams, here live from the Right Side studio. Local, state, national, we got all the issues, man, all of them. And we're solid, conservative, and like the dude just said, just plain right. All right, hey, Kelsey, I tell you what, I put a message on the board for you. Brother, go ahead and get that clip we did with Representative Massey and Buttigieg. Get that one up again for me and highlight it when you're good. Because I had some listeners tell me that, and it was my fault, I timed it too close to the end of the hour. The outro music kicks in automatically. You can't do a thing about it. But so when the bump music starts playing, it was hard to hear what the conversation was, and it was so good that I don't want to lose it for this segment. So we're going to play that again. Kelsey, you just highlight it when you're good. It's already highlighted? Man, you were like way too fast. All right. Kelsey is on the ball. So, all right, here's the deal. Let me set the stage for you again. I'm in the green raw deal. Buttigieg can't answer the questions to the satisfaction of Representative Thomas Massie, who happens to also be an MIT graduate, who knows a little something about something, you know what I'm saying? So Buttigieg is talking Green New Deal, Green Raw Deal, I'm calling it. Representative Massie is saying, yeah, but, and giving him actual statistics. I mean, so by the way, so I just had Chris from Madison text me, and he pointed out this. He said, if you'll recall, Bernie and AOC's first bill included replacement of buildings and structures nationwide with green rebuilds. God almighty. It didn't pass, he says. Now the new buzzword is called passive cooling. That's structural building thermodynamics to generate airflow and natural cooling. My response to that was, yeah, back in the log cabin days, that's what we called a dog trot, where the air flowed down the middle. That's what that was for. Yeah, and then he sent me a link to an article from 2019 on Breitbart about how Green New Deal's upgrades and require replacements of buildings in the next 10 years. It was ridiculous. He also points out, Chris from Madison did, that the current manufacturing capacity in the United States does not even have the ability to get us to the point where we would have 50% of the cars made to run on the roads that are electric. But that being said, that dialogue we had a minute ago between Representative Thomas Massie and Secretary of Transportation Pete Buttigieg, let's play it again. Go ahead and play it.
We don't have the capacity to produce that energy. You aptly used the word need. You could say want as well. There's needs and wants to make this fantasy work by 2030, but the reality is the capability is not going to be there. The average household uses 17% of their electricity for air conditioning. And that would mean the average household uses 1,870 kilowatt hours per year for air conditioning. If that average household plugged in electric cars, do you know how much more electricity they would use in comparison to the air conditioning that air conditions their whole house?
No, but again, I would emphasize it will be less energy
overall. Let me help you with that first before we go on, because the numbers are important. It would take four times as much electricity to charge the average household's cars as the average household uses on air conditioning. Do you think that could be? So if we reach the goal by 2030 that Biden has of 50% adoption instead of 100% adoption, that means the average household would use twice as much electricity charging one of their cars as they would use for all of the air conditioning that they use for the entire year. Do you think this could contribute to rolling blackouts and brownouts in areas of the country where air conditioning is basically considered essential?
Not if we prepare. Look, the fact...
just stop. Not if we prepare in the next 7 years. In the next 7 years, we're going to rebuild the entire electrical grid infrastructure. It's going to be awesome. Okay. You know how long it takes us to get permits? You know how long it takes us to get the environmentals done on a site prep to build anything? To put up a garden shed? You know what it takes? And they're going to redo the electrical grid infrastructure. They're going to downgrade the coal-fired plants that power much of the grid now, especially TVA. TVA has got a ton of its generation in coal. And then they're going to up the manufacturing processes to put 50% of the cars on the road are going to be electric. It's going to be awesome. Really? Where are the charging stations going to be? I mean, I just got back from a trip to Kentucky and back. We just, you know, ran up there for a family funeral, and you know, filling up the car was painful. I mean, I even posted it on Twitter. By the way, you can follow me on Twitter if you want to, at Sin, that's S-E-N, at Sin Phil Williams. But I just posted this morning with a picture of Biden saying I did that. But it was a picture of the gas pump, one leg of the gas pump, $71 to fill up my truck. $71 to fill up my truck. And I wasn't on empty, by the way. It wasn't like I scooted in on fumes. Even still, $71. Well, what? But here's the thing. Name me the electric vehicle that I could go ahead and drive to Kentucky and back without having to recharge that sucker. And oh, by the way, how long does it take to recharge that sucker? And oh, by the way, where are the charging stations en route? How do you, I mean, I remember back in the old days, okay, so Boomer, I'm old. Just for what it's worth, I remember back in the day when AAA would, you know, you didn't have the navigator in your car that told you where the next gas station was. So AAA would actually make you what's called a triptych. You could go to AAA, they would build the triptych for you. It would tell you where every gas station and restaurant was on the route that you wanted to take.
I actually remember that.
You remember that?
Yes, I only remember that because my mom made me learn how to read a map, and she always hand me the AAA maps, those trip tickets, and so I would always read it for
and you.
Her.
They would bind them for you, and you could flip through them and all
yes.
that? Yes. Yeah. Oh, how about that? Okay, yeah. Good. Well, I know your mom, and I would expect no less.
She's a good woman.
And actually, apparently she didn't trust your dad to read the map. She gave it to you. I don't know how to explain that, but okay.
Yeah, I probably would keep her more on, you know, on track.
Okay. Anyway, all said and done, folks, this ain't going to work. Not by 2030. Now, I'm for an all-of-the-above policy. I am not anti-renewable energies, all right? The energy sources that come from wind and solar, if they're viable, okay. And I understand that there are opportunities then also to, you know, put solar panels on your house and reduce your own draw from the grid. It's possible. I get it. And I don't mind somebody having an electric vehicle. I told you I was pretty much admiring the guy that picked us up in an Uber when Charlene and I were on a trip last year, and he was driving a Tesla, but he drives it just around town and pulls it back in the garage at night, charges it up for the next day. He's not taking long trips. What are you going to do if you have that emergency run like we did to go be with family in a difficult situation and it's out of state? That was literally, put it all together, that was about 13 to 14 hours of driving. You're not going to do it on an EV. You're not. Not under current capabilities. And so what do they have to do then? They have to subsidize it with government tax dollars, which, by the way, means me and you. When they say government pays for it, government subsidizes, that's you and I. That's us. We're paying for it. When they can't build solar wind or wind farms, guess who pays for it? We do. When Biden executes his opportunities to abuse the privileges of the executive branch by declaring another emergency, and he's, you know, got the National Defense Authorization Act being used by the federal government to buy solar panels and to increase production of solar panels. Who's paying for that? You and I are. Well, CNBC decided to kind of wear Pete Buttigieg out too. They were having none of it. I've been rather impressed by CNBC lately. I don't know how to take this. I mean, is this the end times? What is happening right now? Anyway. So Daily Caller reports that CNBC host presses Buttigieg on green energy agenda as Europe struggles. So DOT Secretary Pete Buttigieg was grilled Wednesday about the transition to green energy while speaking on CNBC's Squawk Box. And the host asked him, he said, you know, he's got a philosophical question here. He's talking about dealing with emissions. He's talking about the fact that we've got India building coal plants. China's building coal plants hand over fist, he says. Really not helping our efforts. Wind and solar won't power the homes in Europe. How do we not use hydrocarbons to make sure they're near term? These people aren't either freezing or dying from the heat. And Buttigieg says, well, I think countries like India and China should be challenged to follow the lead of the United States. Oh, that's going to happen. China's going to look over and go, you know, I really wish we could create an unsustainable opportunity for our people, too. Why don't we do that? Not going to happen. Hey, line five. I got a caller on line five. Let me grab that real quick. Line five, Michael from Madison. Hey, Michael, how you doing today?
Doing all right. So I just wanted to tell you, I'm on my way back from Nashville today in my 2018 Tesla Model S.
All right.
And I have 86,000 miles on this car, and I have driven it all over the Southeast, from Louisville to Miami, East Coast, all the way out to Wichita, Kansas, and anywhere in between. And there's nowhere that I will not road trip this car in North America. The Teslas in particular have supercharger stations all over the country, and the car tells you where you need to go to stop to charge. The vast majority of them are in places where there are services, and so if it takes 20 to 30 minutes to charge, you can go in, use the restroom, stop down, have a sit-down dinner if you want to. And I found that my typical road trips are a little bit longer than what they used to be, but I also arrive much more relaxed.
Oh, did we lose
3 minutes and 22 seconds.
All right. Well, hey, let me ask you a question, good. Michael. I appreciate that. And, sure. And by the way, I have no issue with Teslas. In fact, I enjoyed that Tesla Uber drive that I had the other day. I was a little jealous of how quiet it was. But here's the thing. You just said something that gets me. Two points. One is just yep. yesterday, I made that same trip from Huntsville to Louisville, all right? And I know what that road is like, and I know what the time frame is like. So when I've got a there and back trip that's going to wind up being, let's go ahead and label that trip as being roughly 10 hours total if you were there and back. Can you do that without a recharge?
Well, you can't do it without a recharge, but you can't do it in a gas without stopping to fuel up either.
No, and, I can get gas in like 2 to 3 minutes. I mean, I can pull over to a gas station, and I can pump gas for 5, 6, 7 minutes tops and then buy a drink and be on the road again. And you're saying it takes 20 to 30 minutes for how much of a recharge?
To top back off until however far I need to go. I mean, my car, the battery lasts about 250 miles, and I'll stop. You know, I try to get to a charger at a lower rate of charge because it charges faster the lower the battery's drained. So, yeah, I mean, it does take a little bit longer. That is absolutely true. But as I said, it also is a little bit more relaxing because you're getting a chance to get out of the car, walk, stretch a little bit. You know, and if you, like I said, sometimes you sit down and have something to eat. But either way, I'll never go back to an ICE car after having this. I absolutely love this car.
Well, and okay, and that's great. That's great for you. Let me ask you this. Do you think that knowing what you know, that our current grid, our current charging station infrastructure, and our current manufacturing capabilities in the auto industry can sustain President Biden's plan to have 50% of all cars on the road by 2030 being electric like yours?
Again, I'm not a Biden supporter by any stretch, but I will say that the plan is by 2030 for half of the cars to be sold, not for half of the cars on the road. So there is a big difference there. But you're right, we are lagging behind in charging infrastructure, absolutely. But on top of that, the charging infrastructure here is broken. The standard, there's multiple standards, there's multiple problems that needs to be addressed as well.
Okay, I'm not sure why cars would be sold but not drove. So you're saying that his plan is just to make sure people buy the cars, but they don't necessarily have to drive them. Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm saying that from my understanding, his plan is that 50% of new cars sold would be EVs or, you know, whatever. And it's, to me, it's up to the manufacturers to offer compelling options that people want to buy. So okay. Like my Tesla, I wanted to buy it. I didn't buy it because I was compelled to by the government. I bought it because, well, frankly, I bought this one because at the time it was the fastest production car ever made.
Well, and by the way, Teslas are cool. I mean, and they look cool. But let me ask you this too: how did your Tesla compare to a similar model in a gas combustion engine style car? I mean, in terms of cost of purchase, how much more?
So in my case, I bought a performance, the top of the line performance Model S. So the list price was well over six figures. I didn't buy it because it was an economical vehicle. I bought it again because it was a luxury performance vehicle.
Okay.
But right now, I got to say, it's nice. You know, my electric, the app, I spend about $60.
Oh.
And I also have an office out of my, and that's at my home. And I also have a home office. So the interesting thing is I get to write off the electricity use on my taxes each year. So it actually is less than that. Comparatively, I would be spending about $400 a month in gasoline for a simpler vehicle with my driving style.
Okay. And I heard several things in there that bother me. And by the way, I just realized I'm running over on my break, so I appreciate you calling. We're going to have to take this call and move on. But you, I mean, by the way, nothing you said offends me. I like the fact that you like your car. I'm good with that. What I don't like is the idea that perhaps we're subsidizing your tax credits because you bought a car that is not currently going to make the market. It is very likely more expensive than what the average citizen will pay for another vehicle of similar style in a combustion engine. You do take a whole lot longer to recharge it for the trips. So the things that I'm saying are a problem here that are being foisted upon us without our desires, you know, being the chief, you know, concern in the market, are still pretty valid, in my opinion. You can do what you want, and I don't mind anybody buying what they want. The reality is the government shouldn't tell us what we have to buy or restructure everything using our tax dollars when it's really not sustainable at this point. And I have run way over right now. Kelsey, take us to a break and ask the callers who are holding on the line if they don't mind to hold on, because I'd love to hear what they have to say. All right, folks, Phil Williams, I got more. I didn't even get to all of it. Like the fact that to build the batteries it takes, China's using slave labor. Does that matter to the Democrats right now? Or how about the fact that Ford is going to lay off 8,000 of its workers to help finance its electric vehicle initiative? Oh, my gosh. All right, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Running long, going to a break. We'll be right back. We are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, covering all of North Alabama. Solid conservative, just plain right. So, yeah, listen, I'm going to, Kelsey, I don't know what you're telling me there with that about the callers. Do I have callers? Do I not have callers on the line there? But just grab the mic and tell me. Yay, nay?
They're here. One said he may drop off because he has other things he's got to do, but one, okay. I'm going to rescreen them.
Okay. All right. Well, go ahead and do that and highlight whichever one I got to take first. We have like a minute and a half, so we better do it quick. Folks, listen, by the way, I appreciate callers. And that last call I wanted to run long on because I wanted to make sure I knew what was what. And he didn't talk me off the ledge. I think this Green New Deal is still a green raw deal. I don't mind somebody likes their Tesla, but it's still problematic. Line one, Jerry from Madison. Jerry, thanks for hanging on. We got about a minute. What's on your mind, man?
All right. Hey, Phil. Thanks for taking my call. So I have a Tesla, and if I had a chance to go back, I wouldn't buy it again. I bought it because it has 7 seats, and the companion hates going to the gas station. So we tried to take a trip to the beach and various other places. Every 2 hours, we have to stop for an hour to charge.
Oh, my gosh.
We want to get there. We have kids. It's ridiculous. If I could stop somewhere 15, 20 minutes, get a charge, hit the road, I'm good. I don't need an hour to stretch my legs. That's ridiculous. So yeah. What I ended up finding is that it's absolutely absurd to drive this car anywhere but locally. And that's wow. What I did. I went out and I bought a hybrid Volvo that I can plug in and charge at the house. I get a day's trip out of that Volvo on electric. And if I do make a long trip, I get at least 500 miles before I have to stop. I can make it from here to the beach, only yeah. stopping once.
There you go.
My kids all are right. asleep. I'm good to go.
I get it, man.
Whole electric. Go ahead.
No, I said I get it. That makes sense. Hey, listen, my music's playing,
this
brother.
Whole electric initiative is ridiculous. I mean, forcing people to buy all electric vehicles. Now, a hybrid is the only way to go, period.
All right. Man, I got to go, and I appreciate you holding. Thanks so much. And, Kelsey, tell my other caller I appreciate it, but we're going to have to move on and take that break that we got to take. Coming up next, folks, Dale Jackson, Jeff Poore, and me, the Grand Council. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.